Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, today is a very sad day for a lot of people. It's one of those kind of days that stays in your memory bank, and you don't talk about it every day. You probably don't consciously remember it every day, but it's there. It's there in your memory, and it will probably be there for the rest of our lives. September 11th in 2001, our enemies changed the world as we know it here in the United States of America. I remember as a young woman, because I had three boys, I remember people saying to me, it was after Vietnam, all the things that happened in Vietnam, all the friends I had that came home from Vietnam that had so many issues to deal with. Some of them that I still see whose lives have changed forever because of the 2 years that they spent in Vietnam. I was very young then, and I didn't have a lot of opinions about a lot of things. I was too busy trying to grow up. But I remember seeing these people that I had known since I was like in grade school. And they'd changed so much. And I had one friend that I was very close to who shared stories with me that I still think about and remember. But I always said, they said, would you let your boys go to war, Renee? And I said, I don't want my boys to go to war, no. I said, I think I'd want to take a stand if they were going to go fight in another country. And everybody said, really? And I said, yeah. Because even then, in my 20s, I realized that a lot of other countries, even though they say they wanted our help, they didn't want our help. And I do get the fact that in a lot of cases, it's like if you shrink it down and put it on a smaller scale, every time we don't get involved in something like that, somebody else gets stronger and they take a shot at us, is the simplicity of it. It's just like if you took it down to a smaller level, shrink it up to your own family. If one of the families in your family is fighting with another family, if you don't intervene when you are kind of like I am the matriarch and you don't intervene or do something to help in some way, shape, or form, and that problem escalates into something else, pretty soon the whole family takes sides. And pretty soon you have a war in your family. Now, I realize it's on a much, much smaller scale, and I hope you can all grasp what I'm saying to you. This is why there's controversy right now with what's going on in Syria, because we know, as the United States of America, as what we stand for, even when we don't want to get involved, even when we all know that it's probably a better idea if we stay out of it, we have to get involved in some way. Otherwise, the repercussions of us not getting involved and not taking a stand and not showing our strength will have repercussions down the road. Now, I don't claim, probably never will claim, to completely understand politics or anything about it. But I do understand people. And if the strongest nation doesn't step in and say, okay, this has to be done and that has to be done, if nobody listens, then you step away again. But in most cases, it makes a difference to step in and do something in the very beginning before it escalates. Now, if somebody else wants to step in and do that, then again, we lose our seat. we lose our seat as who we are. Now, I always said that the only time I would agree with fighting a war is if they were on our land. And the day that that happened, I can remember feeling like, oh my God, did this really happen? Did they really come here and do that? Now, I know that years and years ago, things happened at Pearl Harbor and all the repercussions from that. And a lot of people were hurt, and that was a horrific day as well. But see, that was kind of before me, and I figured we took care of that. You know, like I said, I don't get so deep into it that I can even analyze it. I just know what I see at face value. And I think most of us, unless we're in the military in some way, shape, or form, or involved in politics, that's where we stay. We're kind of on the outside looking in. But in the same token, we want to be free. We want our rights. We want what we have here, even though it is completely imperfect, it is here, and there is some semblance of organization and protocol. If we didn't have that, things would be incredibly chaotic, and even, believe it or not, a bigger mess than it is right now. Now, you know, I've never, in all the years since this happened, that morning, I was the general manager at the Institute, and I was having a manager's meeting. And the phone started ringing out in the lobby. We were in the therapy building having our meeting, and the phone started ringing, and people's cell phones started ringing. I'm like, what's going on? And everybody said they just, you know, they just hit the towers. And I'm like, what towers? What they hit them with? It was like total chaos. Now, obviously, we all stayed at work that day. We had guests that we had to talk to because they had family in New York City. We did have a couple guests way back then who were concerned about family members. And indeed, as time went on, we found out that we had many what we called alumni that came to Hippocrates who had lost people that day. But I never really understood the sequence of events. So I did find an article that I'd like to share with you just so that we can give some respect and remember what happened that day. And send some, I don't know, support, love, respect out to those people that really had a big part in that day, the firemen, the policemen, everybody that ran in that mass chaos event and did whatever they could in their own small way in the big picture, but did whatever they could to make something better for someone else. And, of course, to those that were doing things but didn't survive them. The September 11th attacks, also referred to as September 11, 9-1-1, etc., were a series of four coordinated terrorist attacks launched by the Islamic terrorist group Al-Qaeda upon the United States in New York City and in Washington, D.C. metropolitan area on Tuesday, September 11, 2001. Four passenger airliners were hijacked by 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists so they could be flown into buildings in suicide attacks. Two of those planes, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175, were crashed into the North and South Towers, respectively, of the World Trade Center's complex in New York City. Within 2 hours, both towers collapsed, with debris and resulting fires causing partial or complete collapse of all other buildings in the WTC complex. WTC, in case everybody doesn't know, is the World Trade Center. It's probably going to be called that from then on out. I don't want anybody to be confused. As well as a major damage to 10 other large surrounding structures. A third plane, American Airlines Flight 77, was crashed into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the United States Department of Defense, leading to a partial collapse in its western side. The fourth plane, United Airlines Flight 93, was targeted at Washington, D.C., but crashed into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, after its passengers tried to overcome the hijackers. In total, almost 3,000 people died in the attacks, including 227 civilians and 19 hijackers aboard the four planes. It also was the deadliest incident for firefighters in the history of the United States. Suspicion quickly fell on al-Qaeda, although the group's leader, Osama bin Laden, initially denied any involvement. In 2004, he claimed responsibility for the attacks. Al-Qaeda and bin Laden cited U.S. support of Israel, the presence of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia, and sanctions against Iraq as motives for the attacks. The United States responded to the attacks by launching the War on Terror and invading Afghanistan to depose the Taliban, which had harbored al-Qaeda. Many countries strengthened their anti-terrorism legislation and expanded law enforcement powers. Having evaded capture for years, bin Laden was located and killed by U.S. forces in May 2011. So it took us almost 10 years to find bin Laden, and that was a story in itself that I'm sure most of you remember. The destruction of the Twin Towers and other properties caused serious damage to the economy of Lower Manhattan and had a significant effect on global markets. Cleanup of the World Trade Center site was completed by May 2002, and the Pentagon was repaired within a year. Numerous memorials have been constructed, including the National September 11th Memorial and Museum in New York, the Pentagon Memorial, and the Flight 93 National Memorial in Pennsylvania. After a lengthy delay, the 1,776-foot-tall One World Trade Center was completed at the World Trade Center site in New York City this year, in 2013. Early on the morning of September 11, 2001, 19 hijackers took control of four commercial airlines, two Boeing 757s and two Boeing 767s, en route to California, three headed to Los Angeles and one to San Francisco. After takeoffs from Boston, Massachusetts, Newark, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C., large planes with long flights were intentionally selected for hijacking because they would be heavily fueled. The four flights were American Airlines Flight 11, left Boston's Logan Airport at 7:59 en route to Los Angeles with a crew of 11 and 76 passengers, not including five hijackers. The hijackers flew the plane into the North Tower of the World Trade Center at 8:46 a.m. United Airlines Flight 175 left Logan Airport at 8:14 a.m. en route to Los Angeles with a crew of 9 and 51 passengers, not including five hijackers. The hijackers flew the plane into the South Tower of the World Trade Center at 9:03 a.m. American Airlines Flight 77 left Washington, Dulles International Airport in Virginia, at 8:20 a.m. en route to Los Angeles with a crew of 6 and 53 passengers, not including five hijackers. The hijackers flew the plane into the Pentagon at 9:37 a.m. United Airlines Flight 93 left Newark International Airport at 8:42 a.m. en route to San Francisco with a crew of 7 and 33 passengers, not including 4 hijackers. As passengers attempted to subdue the hijackers, the aircraft crashed into the ground near Shanksville, Pennsylvania at 10:03 a.m. Media coverage was intense during these attacks and aftermath, beginning moments after the first crash into the World Trade Centers. The list of events: at 8:46 a.m., 5 hijackers crashed American Airlines 11 into the World Trade Center North Tower, and at 9:03, United Airlines Flight 175 into the South Tower. So 8:46, and then 17 minutes later into the South Tower. And then Flight 77 into the Pentagon almost an hour later at 9:37. And the fourth flight, Flight 93, under the control of 4 hijackers because they were overtaken by the people on the plane, crashed near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. So the incredibly brave people on that plane stopped them from making it to Washington. The passengers actually fought the hijackers, according to records. Flight 93's target is believed to have been either the Capitol or the White House. Flight 93's cockpit voice recorder revealed crew and passengers tried to seize control of the plane from the hijackers after learning through phone calls that hijacked planes had been crashed into buildings that morning. That's one good thing about all of the ways of staying in touch with each other that we have today that we didn't have 50 years ago or back in the day of Pearl Harbor. Once it became evident to the hijackers that the passengers might regain control of the plane, the hijackers rolled the plane and intentionally crashed it. Some passengers and crew members who called from the aircraft using the cabin airphone service and mobile phones provided details. Several hijackers were aboard each plane. They used mace, tear gas, and pepper spray to overcome attendants, and some people aboard had been stabbed. Reports indicated hijackers stabbed and killed pilots, flight attendants, and one or more passengers. In their final report, the 911 commission found the hijackers had recently purchased multi-function hand tools and assorted knives and blades. A flight attendant on Flight 11, a passenger on Flight 175, and passengers on Flight 93 said the hijackers also had bombs. But one of the passengers said he thought the bombs were fake. The FBI found no traces of explosives at the crash sites. And the 911 commission concluded that the bombs were probably fake. Gosh, I may be sorry I read all of this, everybody. And you may be sorry you're listening. Sometimes not knowing some things is better than knowing everything. 3 buildings in the World Trade Center complex collapsed due to fire-induced structural failure. The South Tower collapsed at 9:59 a.m. after burning for 56 minutes in a fire caused by the impact of the United Airlines Flight 175 and the explosion of its fuel. The North Tower collapsed at 10:28 after burning for 102 minutes. When the North Tower collapsed, debris fell on the nearby 7 World Trade Center building, damaging it and starting fires. These fires burned for hours, compromising the building's structural integrity. And 7 World Trade Center collapsed at 5:21 p.m. The Pentagon sustained major damage. At 9:40 a.m., the FAA grounded all aircraft within the continental U.S., and aircraft already in flight were told to land immediately. All international civilian aircraft were either turned back or redirected to airports in Canada or Mexico, and all international flights were banned from landing on U.S. soil for 3 days. The attacks created widespread confusion among news organizations and air traffic controllers. Among the unconfirmed and often contradictory news reports aired throughout the day, one of the most prevalent said a car bomb had been detonated at the U.S. State Department's headquarters in Washington, D.C. Another jet, Delta Airlines Flight 1989, was suspected of having been hijacked, but the aircraft responded to controllers and landed safely in Cleveland, Ohio. In a September 2002 interview, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Shib, who are believed to have organized the attacks, said Flight 93's intended target was the United States Capitol, not the White House. During the planning stage of the attacks, Mohammed Atta, the hijacker and pilot of Flight 11, thought the White House might be too tough a target and sought an assessment from Hani Hanjour, who would later hijack and pilot Flight 77. Mohammed said al-Qaeda initially planned to target nuclear installations rather than the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, but decided against it, fearing things could get out of control. Final decisions on targets, according to Mohammed, were left in the hands of the pilots. So in other words, once they were up in the air and things were happening, there must have been communication between the aircrafts that we didn't pick up on, which seems strange to me. But how else would they know what each other was doing and that the kind of change in plans? Of course, who knows? A pilot could be using a cell phone, and brings us back to all the controversy right now with the NSA, doesn't it? Kind of opens our eyes to some of the things that we do need to do, despite the fact that we feel like it's infringing on our privacy and our rights. This is scary, and this could have been, believe it or not, much, much worse. The attacks resulted in the deaths of 2,996 people, including the 19 hijackers, and 2,977 victims. The victims included 246 on the four planes, from which there were no survivors, 2,606 in New York City in the towers and on the ground, and 125 at the Pentagon. Nearly all of the victims were civilians. 55 military personnel were among those killed at the Pentagon. More than 90% of the workers and visitors who died in the towers had been at or above the points of impact. I'm going to read that again. More than 90% of the workers and visitors who died in the towers had been at or above the points of impact. Okay, so everybody's getting a visual for that, right? Remember the picture of the aircraft hitting the sides of the buildings. So everybody who was up on those upper floors are the ones that were harmed the most. In the North Tower, 1,355 people at or above the point of impact were trapped and died of smoke inhalation, fell or jumped from the tower to escape the smoke and flames, or were killed in the building's eventual collapse. The destruction of all three staircases in the tower when Flight 11 hit made it impossible for anyone above the impact zone to escape. 107 people below the point of impact died as well. In the South Tower, one stairwell was left intact after Flight 175 hit, allowing 14 people located on the floors of impact, including one man who saw the plane coming at him, and four more from the floors above to escape. 9/11 operators who received calls from individuals inside the towers were not well informed of the situation as it rapidly unfolded, and as a result, told callers not to descend the tower on their own. 630 people died in that tower, fewer than half the number killed in the North Tower. Casualties in the South Tower were significantly reduced by some occupants deciding to start evacuating as soon as the North Tower was struck. Again, I want to intervene. It shows us how incredible we can really be, as awful and as big an impact as this day, this event, this horrible act of attack had on us. It could have been worse if we weren't as strong as what we are and capable as what we are. A lot of people survived that day, and a lot of people saved a lot of other people. In some ways, when you read this story, along with the overwhelming feeling of sadness and a little bit of anger, you also feel some pride, don't you? That there were some people that took charge and made sure that there were some survivors. That's kind of amazing. At least 200 people fell or jumped to their deaths from the burning towers. There's a picture that's been shown many times, and it's called The Falling Man, and that's what that is. Landing on the streets and rooftops of adjacent buildings hundreds of feet below. Some occupants of each tower above the point of impact made their way towards the roof in hope of a helicopter rescue, but the roof access doors were locked. No plan existed for helicopter rescues, and combination of roof equipment and thick smoke and intense heat prevented helicopters from approaching. A total of 411 emergency workers died as they tried to rescue people and fight fires. The New York City Fire Department lost 340 firefighters, a chaplain, and two paramedics. The New York City Police Department lost 23 officers. The Port Authority Police Department lost 37 officers. Eight emergency medical technicians, EMTs, and paramedics from private emergency medical services were killed. Cantor Fitzgerald LP, an investment bank on the 101st and 105th floors of the North Tower, lost 658 employees, considerably more than any other employer. Marsh Incorporated, located immediately below Cantor Fitzgerald on floors 93 through 100, lost 358 employees. And 175 employees of Aon Corporation were also killed. The National Institute of Standards and Technology estimated about 17,400 civilians were in the World Trade Center complex at the time of the attacks. Turnstile counts from the Port Authority suggest 14,154 people were typically in the Twin Towers by 8:45 a.m. So it's considerably more that morning for whatever reasons. The vast majority of people below the impact zone safely evacuated the buildings. After New York, New Jersey lost the most state citizens, with the city of Hoboken sustaining the most deaths. More than 90 countries lost citizens in the attacks on the World Trade Center. Wow. Two people were added to the official death toll after dying from health conditions linked to exposure to dust from the collapse of the World Trade Center. Weeks after the attack, the death toll was estimated to be over 6,000, more than twice the number of the deaths eventually confirmed. The city was only able to identify remains for about 1,600 of the World Trade Center victims. The medical examiner's office collected about 10,000 unidentified bone and tissue fragments that cannot be matched to the list of the dead. bone fragments were still being found in 2006 by workers who were preparing to demolish the damaged Dutch Bank building. In 2010, a team of anthropologists and archaeologists searched for human remains and personal items at the Fresh Kills landfill, where 72 more human remains were discovered, bringing the total find to 1,845. DNA profiling continues in an attempt to identify additional victims. As of August 2011, 1,631 victims have been identified, while 1,122 of the victims remained unidentified. The remains are being held in storage at Memorial Park outside the New York City Medical Examiner's facilities. It is expected that the remains will be removed in 2013 to a repository behind a wall at the 911 Museum. As of July 2011, a team of scientists at the Office of Chief Medical Examiner continues to try to identify the remains in the hope that improved technology will allow them to identify other victims. There's a lot of stories that talk about some more of the damage and where bodies were found. I think it's too overwhelming, and I wanted to make sure that everybody understood the series of events that day. And even though I think most of us knew pretty much, I like the way this particular article had everything set up for us to be able to see exactly what happened that day. This story goes on to fill us in about the response and things like that. So I am going to, there's also, I'm going to go to the planning of the attacks, because I think that it's a good idea to know what kind of doors were opened by us unexpectedly or without enough consideration. And again, reading this story, I think, helps me understand NSA a little bit more. I hope it does you as well. The idea for the attacks came from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who first presented it to Osama bin Laden in 1996. At that time, bin Laden and al-Qaeda were in a period of transition, having just relocated back to Afghanistan from Sudan. In 1998, African embassy bombings and bin Laden's 1998 fatwa, I don't know what that means, marked a turning point as bin Laden became intent on attacking the United States. In late 1998 or early 1999, bin Laden gave approval for Mohammed to go forward with organizing the plot. A series of meetings occurred in early 1999 involving Mohammed, bin Laden, and his deputy Mohammed Atif. Atif provided operational support for the plot, including target selections and helping arrange travel for the hijackers. Bin Laden overruled Mohammed, rejecting some potential targets such as U.S. Bank Tower in Los Angeles because there was not enough time to prepare for such an operation. Bin Laden provided leadership and financial support for the plot and was involved in selecting participants. Bin Laden initially selected Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Mindar, both experienced jihadists who had fought in Bosnia. Hazmi and Mindar arrived in the United States in mid-January 2000. In spring 2000, Hazmi and Mindar took flying lessons in San Diego, California, but both spoke little English, did poorly with flying lessons, and eventually served as secondary or muscle hijackers. In late 1999, a group of men from Hamburg, Germany arrived in Afghanistan, including Mohammed Atta, Marwan al-Shahi, Ziad Jarrah, and Ramzi bin al-Shib. Bin Laden selected these men because they were educated, could speak English, and had experience living in the West. New recruits were routinely screened for special skills, and an Al-Qaeda leader consequently discovered that Hani Hanjour already had a commercial pilot's license. Hanjour arrived in San Diego on December 8, 2000, joining Hazmi. They soon left for Arizona, where Hanjour took refresher training. Marwan al-Shahi arrived at the end of May 2000, while Atta arrived June 3, 2000. Anjara arrived on June 27, 2000. Bin al-Shib applied several times for a visa to the United States, but as a Yemeni, he was rejected out of concerns he would overstay his visa and remained as an illegal immigrant. The three Hamburg cell members all took pilot training in South Florida. Oh, that hurts me. In spring of 2001, the secondary hijackers began arriving in the United States. In July 2001, Atta met with Bin al-Shahib in Spain, where they coordinated details of the plot, including final target selection. Bin al-Shahib also passed along Bin Laden's wish for the attacks to be carried out as soon as possible. So you see, tremendous amount of thought, tremendous amount of money traveling right here under our noses. It's kind of scary. I am going to invite Shelley in. She's been listening. There's a lot more to this article. I can go back to it if we have some questions, but I think we get the gist of that day, as horrible as it was. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing pretty good, and you?
I'm good. I have a little bit of a stomach ache after reading this whole, well, actually about a third of this article. But it's what I wanted to share with people today. A lot of the rest of it that I read late last night is it gets very deep, and I don't think unless you're really working on something to understand all this, it's not necessary for everyone to hear. It's about history and assumptions made by other peacemakers as to why and the where and the how and the why and the how comes and all that kind of stuff, which is controversial at the least. But the facts I have established pretty much. So, again, I decided to do this today because I do believe there's many of us who were that day glued to any source of media that we could find. And as I said, I got the first phone call at about, I want to say it was about almost 9 o'clock in the morning at the therapy building at Hippocrates. My sister called me from home, and I went to the phone, and I said, "No, that must be some kind of a joke." I really didn't believe it. And then while I stood there, everybody's cell phones were ringing. Pretty soon, you know, we all were informed of what had happened. And the rest of that day, of course, the news came pouring in from every nook and cranny, and, of course, the sadness. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show this morning that I remembered there were some guests with us that were from Manhattan. And, of course, people were scared to death that perhaps one of their family members were involved. There was one lady who... her husband was a fireman in Manhattan, and we did everything we could to try to reach. There was nothing you could do that day, by the way. There was no reaching anybody in Manhattan, at least for us, there wasn't. But I do remember trying to do that for a couple of the guests who were just so worried. It was a horrific day, and it changed life in the United States as we had always known it. Don't you agree?
Yes, but I remember that I was home that day, and I was like the first one in my family and the group of people I know that had seen the report. I was working from my house, and when I saw the news story break, I was stunned. And it was just like, you know, first the first plane, and then some minutes later, then another plane, and all that. And as the and like you said, for the rest of the day, I couldn't watch anything else. I was just I was so involved in the story. I was so depressed. My chest hurt. My stomach hurt all day. It was just an absolute tragedy. One of the things I noticed right away, and I'm not gonna continue with this train, but it was something that I noticed, is that when the building started collapsing, I couldn't help noticing that it looked like demolition. And I kept thinking to myself, how could a building collapse like that from being hit by a plane? It didn't make any sense to me. You know, I'm surprised that the article you read didn't go into some of the circumstances that came in the aftermath that showed these guys had a lot of internal help. This was not just a simple terrorist attack, which is one of the reasons why I'm critical of our government's techniques, because they should be looking at their own internal operations a little bit more. There was a lot more going on that day than just a terrorist attack. And what it's done is it's made us, the United States people, hate what we consider terrorists without realizing that they couldn't have had access to these buildings without some help. So there's a lot more to this story that, you know, that the people should just be aware that a lot of times what they see in the media, going back to that, is not true. So this story that you just read is the same story that was released, you know, what 13, 14 years ago. And since then, so much more information has come out, and the fact that the buildings were rigged with demolition equipment and things like that. You can watch it. Anybody can watch one of the old videos, because that's what kept – that was my first reaction. I remember it to this day, is that when the buildings started falling, because I had been watching demolition shows. I don't remember how I got into that, but I was in construction at the time, and I was fascinated by what a building falling looked like. And when those three buildings came down, I said, oh, my God, that demolition. There was something set in those buildings. You could tell by the way they fell. They fell straight down into their own footprint. They didn't fall over. The top didn't topple. They fell very neatly into their footprint, one floor at a time. That doesn't happen from being hit by a plane.
Well, that's certainly your prerogative to talk about the way you felt about it happened. I'm not knowledgeable enough to agree or disagree with you in regard to that, because I think I have seen buildings. I watched something get demolished on Miami Beach when I was a kid, and I remember it did fall. It didn't fall to the left or the right or back or forward. It fell in its footprint. It just, like, collapsed. So I don't know. And I would love to argue with you about this, because we have fun when we do that, but I am not knowledgeable enough to say yay or nay to that. I know that there is a lot of controversy about everything that happened that day. I am very, very, very well aware of that. And I am also very well aware of the fact that there's always extenuating circumstances with anything that is this big or this world-changing.
Right.
I think the only reason I felt like, when I started thinking about this a few days ago, 911, I remembered, of course, what I was doing that day. I remembered how I felt. I remembered how indignant I felt that they were on our land in our United States. I felt I felt like somebody had broken into the front door of my house and came in my house and started a problem in my house. I felt invaded when I watched that. And that's where my head and my heart stayed for a long time. And, of course, as the days progressed and things were, found out and all of these kind of reports were made and investigations and all of the above, I really lost sight of what the table of contents was as far as, you know, when things happened, how soon they happened after one another. I do remember watching that night the television and having them show this happening and then that happening and then the site in Pennsylvania where the plane had crashed and all that. And I was like, did this all happen at one time? And indeed, it almost did, but not really. I mean, it was in hours of each other. And in some cases, only 45 minutes or 15 minutes of each other. But I also remember reading and hearing about how many of these people from Saudi Arabia, a good majority of the men that I named off were from Saudi Arabia. And, I mean, they were here, and they were, you know, getting flying lessons here in Florida. And that was okay with everybody. And most of them weren't here with any kind of legal paperwork. And that was okay as well, apparently. And little things like that, which bothers me because, of course, I, in my tenure, again, at the Institute, I had opportunities to meet a lot of people who wanted to be a citizen of the United States of America, who wanted to be here and work, mostly because they fell in love with what was going on at Hippocrates and wanted to be a part of that. And they couldn't come here. And I remember one young woman who spent her life savings trying to accomplish the paperwork to get a permanent visa and live in the United States and work at Hippocrates. And all of her money gone, and she still didn't accomplish it. She's here now because on one of her trips here, she fell in love and married somebody. But it just kind of throws me. And now you and I both know somebody that we would love to see be able to be here and do offer the people that we worry about some wonderful sources because he's bright and intelligent and lives with a heart and all those kind of things. And he can't accomplish this either. And then I read these things and it's like, damn. But maybe that's why it is so difficult now. I don't know. I'm just making that comment. I don't know that that's true or not. But I did pull back up the 19 hijackers, 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. And one from Egypt, one from Lebanon, and two from the United Arab Emirates. I don't even know where that is. What is that? United Arab Emirates? Emirates? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't even know what that
is. It in print. I'm not,
I don't know what that is. But the other thing that I was kind of caught by was the fact that the 911 operators who told everybody to stay put. And that's the reason a good majority of people that died on the one tower, because they told them not to try to go downstairs, and, you know, they ended up collapsing to their death. And had they been able to start going down, I don't know, maybe some of them would have been saved. But there were like close to 1,300 that died on the one tower just because 911 told them to stay put. So imagine people are living with that today as well. But this,
yeah, that's got to be
this
tough.
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, if something's never happened before, you kind of, you know, shoot from the hip and do what you think is right. Doesn't mean it's going to be.
I mean, my fiance was in the city that day, and I couldn't get in touch with him. As it turns out, I don't remember the entire story. I mean, Craig and I have been out of touch for many, many years. We were engaged at that time, and he was actually going into the city at that time. And I think there was some sort of a problem. He never made it to the building. And he was far enough away where he wasn't really affected when they collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he had turned around and started coming home, but there was some sort of a problem, and he never made it to the building that morning. And you hear a lot of these stories, a lot of people saying that they woke up and they just didn't feel good or the last minute or whatever. And it's like, you know, and here they are. They're worrying about not getting into work that day, but they just didn't feel right. And then here it turned out saving their lives. You know, there's so many people that for whatever reason just didn't make it that morning. And they just felt off. It's almost like
it's almost like they felt something in the air and decided not to go in, and it turned out being a decision to save their lives.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we all have a story that we can relate in regard to something like that, a day that things just didn't seem right to us and we changed our habits on a day or our normal modus.
Do you remember the story of that little girl? And there had been several children all over the world. It was just not one. There was this special program. I wish I had taped it. I probably could Google it and find it. But there was this program, and it was talking about psychic children. In fact, I think that was the name of the show. It was either Psychic Kids or Psychic Children. And there was this little girl, and she was, I think, 8 years old. And every now and then she would have visions. She would have a dream, and whatever she dreamt would come true. She dreamt that her aunt died, something like that, and it had already happened. It happened that night that she dreamt it, that kind of stuff. So the family already knew that she had abilities. This one morning she gets up and she drew a picture of New York City in smoke, with all the smoke coming off the buildings, with Jesus, a huge picture of Jesus standing in front with his arms open. This was the day before 9/11 happened. She actually had a vision of the catastrophe. Didn't know what her vision meant, but had drawn that picture. It was on the show. But what a lot of people don't realize is she drew that picture the day before it happened.
Well, you and I both believe that there are people out there that have the ability just with their feelings. I'm not talking about psychic abilities. I'm not talking about people who can look into the future and I think there's some people like that out there as well, but I think there are a lot of people who have an instinctual mechanism in their soul that
yep.
that kind of nudges them and says, you know, today's just not right. Something
mm-hmm.
is awry today. And
yep.
Those feelings always scare me because I always feel like if I embrace them that I'll make something happen. So a lot of times I have a tendency to ignore feelings like that. Have you ever felt that way? Like if I just don't embrace that feeling and give it
you know why? Because every time I've done that, and I've, you know, it's like trial and error, every single time I've gotten that weird gut feeling that something's just not quite right or that I should do this or that I should do that, then I've ignored it because sometimes the thought just seemed absurd. You know, it seems to have no basis in anything. Every single time, without fail, if I ignore it, something goes wrong that could have been prevented if I had done that thing that popped into my head with that gut feeling. Every single time. So over a lifetime, when I get those sensations, regardless of how silly the thought is or how unhinged it is, I will act on it, and sure enough, something unfolds. It was like, oh, my God, am I lucky I did that, or am I lucky I went right instead of left or whatever. So over years, I've learned to listen to that little gut sensation and those I'm not talking random thoughts. I'm talking about something that gets into your, where you feel like butterflies, you know, that gut sensation like in the center of your body. Whenever you feel anything there, you should absolutely listen to it, because it's always going to steer you directly. Your thoughts can sometimes mess you up because you can talk yourself in and out, you can rationalize, but that area when you get like that gut sensation, that's your body is tapping into something that's a little bit more aware than sometimes your head is. I think a lot of times our minds get clouded with external stuff and we rationalize and filter too much, where our guts just kind of have a very very grounded, you know, single reaction. It's truthful. It's always the same. And just listen to it.
Well, and I guess I would go along with that as well. But like I said, sometimes it's I don't know. I'm a Libra, you know, and my
you're always balancing everything.
Balance for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they make fun of me about it all the time because even like.
I look at a wall in the house, everything has to be balanced. There has to, if there's one on this side, there has to be one on that side. If this, you know, and it follows through everything I do. So I do.
Can I say this? You're trying to balance your external reality because internally not so much.
That could be it. Well, you know, one of the other things I wanted to mention, in case there's people out there who have never been to New York City and who have never seen some of the things that are there now, of course, they have the one tower is re-erected and is beautiful. I have seen it. And there is... let me see here. There's all kinds of course, that's called Ground Zero. And there was a big monument or a memorial there for all these years. There's also Tribute and Light, which was an installation of 88 searchlights at the footprints of the World Trade Center towers. And the World Trade Center site memorial competition was held to design an appropriate memorial on the site, and the winning design was called Reflecting Absence, and it consists of a pair of reflecting pools in the footprints of the tower surrounded by a list of the victims' names in an underground memorial space. Very beautiful things that took a lot of thought. There is a Pentagon memorial that was open to the public in 2008, and it consists of a landscape park with 184 benches facing the Pentagon. When the Pentagon was repaired in 2001 to 2002, a private chapel and indoor memorial were included, located at the spot where Flight 77 crashed into the building. And in Pennsylvania, in Shanksville, there is a memorial planned to include a sculpted grove of trees forming a circle around the crash site, bisected by the plane's path, while wind chimes will bear the names of the victims. A temporary memorial is located 500 yards from the crash site right now. And New York City firefighters donated a cross made of steel from the World Trade Center and mounted it on top of a platform shaped like the Pentagon. So many beautiful things have been erected and designed in honor of the people that left us that day. And
you know, I was driving with my niece the other day, Cheyenne, my young niece, and Nina, and we pulled up behind this truck, and there was a bumper sticker, and my niece didn't understand the significance of it. I explained it to her, but it said, it had a picture of the fireman's emblem, and then next to it, it said, all gave some gave all. So she made a comment. She goes, oh, look at that. She says they have the comment backwards. And I said, no. I said, read it, and then I explained to her what it meant. You know, everybody there that day, even civilians, showed incredible courage, showed what we really are all about, which is what you started saying at the beginning. But some of the people, everybody gave something, even civilians, but many people that day gave all. They gave their lives. All the policemen and the firemen that went into that building and that saved people's lives, it just showed the incredible bravery and courage and really what we are as a people. And like you said, it really does make you feel proud to be an American when you see the response of our emergency teams and even a lot of the civilian heroes that day. That, you know, it wasn't even their job, and they still acted with incredible bravery and courage.
Well, I believe we're down to, like, 40 seconds, so I'm in total agreement with you, and I think this is an opportunity for us to remember that we are that. We are a people that are proud, and despite all of our flaws, all our differences, all of the things that make us the conglomeration that we are still amazing. We rise to every time we're beckoned, every time.
That's right.
And we
every time.
With strength, and we do it with great heart. So I want to wish everybody a great day today, and it is pouring here in the acreage. My little dog is huddled underneath my desk chair because he's afraid of thunder and lightning. So I want everybody to be careful out there today and be proud of us, because we deserve it as a people. We deserve to be proud of each other and ourselves. So God bless everybody. Have a great day. Bye, Miss Shelley. I will talk to you later.
Okay, Reen. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye-bye, babe.